The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Freaking First Cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round one recap for this week's Players Championship. Joining me to break it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP, hello, sir.
How are we doing? I got a new microphone arm. We got a 10 to talk about. We got Justin Thomas roller coaster adjacent to Spieth, just having a nightmare. It's been a fun day. I love. You know, we get 23 days a year, Rick, that I would say are like really special when you go majors, players, and then the team events. And this was the first of those 23. So I'm fired up about it.
Oh, I love that. 18 holes in the books at the purest championship in golf. Before we dive into the chronological order of events from Thursday, let's zoom out a little bit here, Kyle. The scoring average on Thursday was about 3/4 of a stroke over par, 72.75 or so. That doesn't really tell the whole story. The afternoon wave dangerously close to a stroke, just less than that, more difficult than the morning wave.
Yeah, I was actually just looking at that. I was trying to finish up kind of a recap of the round, which is always dangerous when there's like 50 guys still on the course, but, you know, It was interesting. Aaron Oberholzer, I always screw that up, was tweeting about this, about how it's not like the wind picked up at TPC Sawgrass, right? It just got more baked out. And actually Morikawa, who shot 65, talked about this after his round. He said, listen, it's getting baked out, and I don't think they're going to water it the rest of the week, which is, you know, music to our ears and music to Colin Morikawa's ears, right? Because that's a huge advantage, a huge benefit to the best ball strikers.
Yeah, well, this being one of those, you know, few dozen days of the year, Kyle, we did not have to wait long for the excitement. The second group that gets to number 17, the infamous Island Green, the sixth ball hit of the day, goes down. Let's run it, Josh.
Island Green.
Yeah, I was starting on the left side of that tee box to really give myself a chance to throw it out right of that flag, use that slope. Oh, yes, it's a sin, hopefully. Oh,
and we have a hole in one.
I am so sorry for my squeak. Holy cow.
Buckets for Buckley.
Hayden Buckley gets a Christina Kim squeak, gets a hat throw into the crowd, gets everybody all riled up on a Thursday morning. He hoops a shot from, I think it was 124 yards with pitching wedge, KP, spins it back into the cup.
Wow, somebody just actually almost just made one as we speak. Chris Kirk almost just made it. It was awesome. His reaction, we didn't get to see him. Well, we guess a little bit of his reaction, but his reaction, they had a side view of it, and it was awesome. It was a really cool way to start the day. And, you know, I was looking back, there haven't been, you know, for as much attention as 17 gets, and I think 17 is fine, there haven't been that many ones ever, you know.
I think it was the 11th or something like that.
Yeah, I think 2003 to 2016, there weren't any. So that's like, whatever, 14 straight years. And then there have been a handful over the last five, six, 7 years. I remember Will Wilcox made one, Lowry, a handful of other guys. But it was a pretty cool way. I feel like that pin, though, is usually the Friday pin.
Right. I was going to say, I don't have any data to back this up, but just memory says that's the ace pin. That four, yeah. Whatever it is, four on, four from the right or whatever. And yeah, you usually don't see that on Thursday out of the gate.
No, I agree. That was the pin that Sergio made his on. And I think it was the year that he
was Lowry's. That was Lowry's pin. That's what they do. You throw it past the stick, you spin it back.
Yeah. Yeah. But to your point, like I was not accustomed to seeing that pin in round one.
Hayden Buckley was shot out of a cannon. So that was his eighth hole of the day. He makes the ace. He birdies 18. He birdies one. He was five under par very early in this championship. And then TPC Sawgrass bites back a little bit. Kyle bogeys on three, four, a double on six, a double on eight. He actually shot a 73, one over par. So great start to the day. Hayden Buckley could not kind of keep it on track for the rest of his outing.
Yeah, he had, let's see here. He goes, I think Craig Perks said this on the ESPN, like on the what's the word I'm looking for?
PGA Tour Live.
Thank you. he was the first player to go 1-3 on 17, 18 since like 1983 or something. Wow. So he goes 1-3-3, 17, 18, 1, and then somehow shoots 41 on the front nine of the course, his back nine on the day. So kind of it was a cool day, but it was kind of a weird day for Hayden Buckley.
Speaking of weird, how about Minwoo Lee, who was literally in the first group out this morning, and he got to six under at one point, Kyle, with a string of birdies on 11, 12, 13. He gave a couple of back coming in, but it was still a four under 68 that featured leg cramps and walking with a trainer who was massaging him and stretching him out as this round continued.
Yeah, it was a normal sport bonanza this morning with Minwoo. Somebody suggested that the trainer that was working his leg looked like Joe Biden, which just killed me. I don't know why, sometimes on these days we're watching so much golf and you're just so immersed in it that the weirdest stuff just makes you laugh, and that was one of the things that made me laugh today. It felt like he was maybe going to withdraw. Now, hearing him afterwards, it didn't sound as serious as it was sort of looking in the moment. He kind of just said, I was cramping. I hadn't really had electrolytes in the last few days, which you're like, it's not like 110 degrees out there. And you're just like, it's not a great look for the golfers or athletes mantra. But Minwoo played great. I didn't realize this, Rick. He's 50th in the world. Is he already in the Masters?
Oh, I can find out for you. So the thing that I find so interesting, so Minwoo's been, he's been great around the world. I think he's just kind of come over to the PGA Tour here recently, made these series of starts in elevated events, but he's been crushing it on the DP World Tour. We've seen him pop up at times, but I do think it is kind of somewhat hilarious that the guy in the lead of the golf tournament is getting like physio treatment mid-round. It's like, he might win the golf tournament or he might WD. I have zero idea how this is going to play out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely no clue. The other thing, wrote this and was sort of tweeting about it, is we talk about it, but we probably don't talk about it enough, that him and his sister are both ranked in the top 50 in the world. She's ranked in the top five on the women's side. That's preposterous, right? Like, that can't happen.
If they are not playing together at the newly created, Grant Thornton Invitational, and if they are not the favorites, something is very, very right. She is unreal, and he's a top 50 player in the world. And he is, as of right now, not qualified for the Masters.
So big week for that, right? Because if he finishes top 10 this week, he's pretty much in the Masters, I would think, because he's sitting on 50 right now. So I think the tournament that you're referring to is the Korda Fowler Invitational.
Yes, that one.
That the Lees should potentially dominate. So yeah, fun day for him.
And he's a great guy too. So rooting for Minwoo the rest of the way. Colin Morikawa.
Mm. Oh boy.
This felt like a good one. Under 65 with not a single blemish on the card. Spectacular golf being played, Kyle. We can tackle this from a couple of angles. Let's start with his recent form, which was pretty much all over the place, right? He had the coulda, woulda, shoulda at the Tournament of Champions. Then he comes back and he missed the cut. If I get this right off the top of my head, he missed the cut in Phoenix. He missed the cut at Bay Hill, but he had the great start at Riv and the great start at Torrey Pines in between there. So it was kind of like Jekyll and Hyde in 2023 so far.
Yeah, and it's a little bit – I'm interested in your take on this because Data Golf put out a thing today about how – you know, the common trope with Morikawa is, hey, if he gains a stroke on the greens per round in a tournament, that's a wrap. Like, he's going to win or he's going to finish second. That's basically what his career has been like. And they put out a graph that was kind of like, yeah, when he putts well, he wins. But also in the weeks that he putts well, he's striking the ball even better than he normally does. So the thinking there is like, hey, when he's on, he's like on. Right. Like, and not just in one category, throughout the bag. And so I almost feel like his 2023, Rick, is a microcosm of kind of what his career has been like, where he's either and he hasn't missed a ton of cuts. So this maybe sounds weird to say, but he's either missed the cut or nearly won this year. And that's a little bit of what you like it, to me, that's a little bit of what his whole career has been.
So what's interesting is I pretty much agree with you. So remember when he first came out and he rattled off what 18 or 19 cuts in a row, and he was going for the Tiger record, right? And he was this really consistent golfer. Since then, he has gotten a lot more volatile in nature, right? We knew his missed cut rate was going to go up, but you're right. You either get kind of ceiling or floor Colin Morikawa, which I would argue if you're a top 10 player in the world,
yeah,
and I think
it's great.
Yeah, you've made this. Yeah, this is what you want to do. You either win or you get 2 days off, and like you don't have to worry about getting into anything. Like, this is how the top guys want to play. His stat profile and his style of golf is really good for winning tournaments.
It is, and you know, I think he's somebody. I was trying to think of guys that have not played as well at TPC Sawgrass that you're like, why is this guy not played that well? We talked about Cantlay on Tuesday, because Mark picked him in the one and done, and right. You're like, yeah, he should play great at TPC Sawgrass. I think Morikawa is another guy. You know, he's very, for the most part, controlled off the tee. You know, I think he manages things very well. The thing about him at TPC Sawgrass is if the wind gets up, you know, we've talked about that, he can get maybe a little squirrely at times, but man, he's just, and he talked about this, he's like, if you're in the fairway, you're going to have a bunch of scoring opportunities. And he was in the fairway a bunch, and he had a bunch of scoring opportunities. So it doesn't make sense that he hasn't played well at this golf course. It does make sense that he would go out and shoot 65 in round one.
Speaking of being in the fairway, the first of two interesting tailor-made equipment nuggets for this Thursday at the Players' Championship, Colin Morikawa went back to his four-year-old tailor-made sim driver in round one. I don't know if it's just a comfort level thing with the older equipment, if it is just trying to find a little bit of that. I think it is hilarious that Morikawa acted like 2022 was this absolute disaster. Like, he's been around for so long and he couldn't believe he didn't win a golf tournament. And maybe it's a little bit of an overreaction. I thought the way that he treated his 2022, but maybe, I don't know, maybe a little bit of that and going back to some old clubs.
Yeah, he got asked about this after his round, actually. And somebody said, you change drivers the way most people change putters or something. And he's like, not really. Like, I don't really change my equipment that much. So I don't know. He gets asked weird questions.
Asked weird questions, and he always gives like just slightly less weird answers. So it makes it makes the question asker look weird, but his answers are also weird. So it's like he's just the less weird guy in the interaction.
Well, I think there's a I think there's a way to sort of protect the question asker, and he doesn't do it, which is fine. That's his prerogative. I'm not being critical of that, but yeah, I forgot what we were even. Oh, the driver. Yeah, I don't I don't know what the deal was there. There's the TaylorMade drive. It was a, I don't know if it was a great day for TaylorMade's driving category.
No, more on that in just 1 second. Looked for a long time on this Thursday that Colin Morikawa was going to be your first round leader until Chad Ramey entered the scene. Obviously, an 8-under bogey-free 64. He gained 5 strokes putting, but do we have his results coming in? Do we have something that looks
they
like
weren't
that?
They weren't good.
Yeah, here we go. Lots of missed cuts, a last place finish at the Tournament of Champions. His last 10 starts, his best finish, I mean, it was that 38th, but that was last. Otherwise, it was a T54. I mean, this is that classic golf is weird edition number 10,562.
Yeah, so it's last 5 starts, T54, T70, cut. Beats Rory by 12 on Thursday. And you're like, this game is stupid and you should never wager on it. I mean, listen, like Ramey, it was a cool day, right? You shoot 64 TPC Sawgrass in your first round there. That's awesome. I've never been more confident that the first round leader of a big event was not going to win than I am with Chad Ramey. I mean, I'm sorry. Like he's a fine player. He won last year in Puerto Rico. He gained 5 strokes with his putter and he's not playing that great. He's just, listen, like the flip side of that is he gives the tournament a sort of identity as an underdog, right? If he goes out and does take down Scheffler, Morikawa, Sam Burns, Hovland, Spieth, it's a little bit of last week with Kurt Kitayama. So it's a win-win situation for him, because if he fades, whatever, he wasn't supposed to be there anyway. But if he doesn't fade, then it's a really cool situation, not just for him, but I think for the tournament.
Yeah, so a couple other little statistical nuggets. That was his best putting round ever by like 2.5 strokes. He was 1,000-1 to win this golf tournament before it started. And DraftKings, for DFS purposes, stuck him with the minimum price available, $6,000. So that was the sentiment on Ramey heading into the event. I'll update his betting odds currently when we get to that on the other side. But yes, not much confidence from Las Vegas that Ramey's going to close this thing out.
No.
Let's get to a couple of notables
from
here.
Nor from Kyle Porter.
Yeah, nor from Texas either. The notables. Let's start with Rory McIlroy, whose day got off to a rough start, a double out of the gate on number 10. He immediately got one of them back at 11, but another bogey on 15. Another on number 1, another on number 3, another on number 9. It was just a rough day for Rory that ended up with a 4 over 76 and generally did not have his superpower, KP, which is the driver. He just put himself in a lot of bad, awkward spots, and that compounds errors at TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah, it does. You know, it's intriguing because last time I looked, he was positive strokes gained off the tee. I think he was like 25th in the field. And that's true. I mean, because it's just math, right? But right. You watch him and you're like, he just didn't put himself in good scoring positions. So that's where it's a little bit of, and also he didn't drive the ball as well as Rory McIlroy normally does, that's you know? Right. And so I thought that here's the way I sort of said it on HQ. I thought that he didn't score because he didn't drive it that great. He had the right miss going on for most of the first part of his day, but then his score ballooned because his short game was bad. So like he could have shot 73 or 72 if he had made a putt over 4 feet before the last putt of the day, or if he hadn't left a ball in the bunker on 9 on his last hole of the day. So it was kind of two different things. It was like, yeah, he didn't score because he didn't really put himself in position to score, but his score shot up and he shot 76 because the short game just wasn't very good.
Yeah, there was a whole I don't remember what number it was, but he was in, I think it was a par 5. He was in the pine straw. Then he hits, I think it was 16, in the pine straw. hits this unbelievable shot to get it on the green, give himself a chance for eagle from 28 feet, then three putts from there. So it's like bad drive, unbelievable second, three jacks from 28 feet, and doesn't get to take advantage of the good stuff. And it just seemed like he was on the wrong side of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. He was. And it's, you know, some people are like, well, he was eight down to Rahm last week, and that's true. And he came back and almost won the tournament. Now he's 11 down to Morikawa. I mean, Rory got shoot 63 on Friday, and nobody would be super surprised. I just don't, to do that now, you have to play pretty perfectly off the tee and from tee to green at a place like TPC Sawgrass. And he doesn't seem like locked in with his driver and just sort of overall, if you want to touch on that.
Yeah. So the other aspect here is that he made the switch to TaylorMade's Stealth 2 driver on Tuesday night at Riviera. And we kind of saw, you know, since then it's been a little erratic. And I thought he finally got asked, or he finally gave us the reason on why he did that. I thought it was pretty interesting. So his old driver, which was what, the Sim 2? Is that what he was using prior?
I think it was the Forgiveness.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So
I think that was the name of the driver. I don't know. I don't know. No, I don't know what they're called. I'm not a gearhead.
Okay. I think it was the Sim 2. And he was saying that at Riviera, they were testing drivers. They test like the springiness. Yeah. They test the club faces. This is the thing that
this was
one year Xander's didn't pass. Right. And Rory, felt that his driver was not going to pass. So he made the switch. And the reason that he thought that is because he hits it so hard. We see this with the long drive guys as well. The more you hit this driver, the springier it gets. And I guess he could feel it, or he could look at his ball speeds, or he could look at his smash numbers and know, hey, this is probably not going to pass. And he didn't even want to risk the bad look on Rory, the bad look on TaylorMade for having a club in his bag that wasn't going to pass. But that's like three or four levels deep into this. I thought that was a very interesting situation he was describing.
It was interesting. And it was funny to watch him. I wasn't there, obviously, but it was funny to sort of see him walk through what he was talking about. Because you could almost see him remember when Bryson got eviscerated during the 2021 Open after he said the driver sucks, because the implication from Rory was that the driver is not exactly what he's been looking for.
Right.
But then at the, like in the middle of it, he was like, you know, it's a lot of user error too. Like, I'm not hitting the ball that well. And that was, it seemed a little bit like he was just, I mean, it's true. He's not swinging it as well as he normally does, but it seemed a little bit of like, oh, I remember what happened to Bryson after he said some of this stuff, and he was trying to save it a little bit.
You want to be critical of the equipment, but you don't want to be critical of the equipment. You've got to kind of dance around and make that happen.
And one of the hardest things I think for golfers that are self-aware at that level is, and we've talked about this a million times, you have to have like just comic self-belief to the point that you're blaming literally anything except for yourself, because that engenders like, well, it can't be me. Like, it engenders self-confidence, right? But Rory's pretty self-aware, and he doesn't want to throw like everybody under the bus. So I don't know. It was sort of funny to like watch somebody like that walk through that series or that sequence of conversation.
As of right now, Rory approximately four shots off the cut number. We'll see where that kind of wraps up. A couple guys, I believe, still out on the golf course. But he's got some work to do on Friday. Scottie Scheffler, slow and steady out of the gate. Steady Scottie makes nine consecutive pars to start his day, holes 10 through 18. He gets a couple of birdies on one and two. Three more birdies at 6, 7, and 9, offset by just one bogey at number 5. And stop me if you've heard this before, Kyle. Scottie Scheffler in the mix after the first round.
Yeah, Scheffler's going to win, just like he was going to win last week at the Arnold Palmer and then didn't. I was talking to somebody today, Rick, about, I think one of the most, I mean, obviously he's a gifted ball striker, like just awesome off the tee, great iron player. He's got all the gifts, but his course management, Rick, is really good. And I think it's a little bit of an underrated aspect of his game. The eighth hole, I don't know if you're watching their group. So it was Rom, Rory, and Scheffler. And Rory ends up kind of, I think it was a little bit long. Rom's off to the right. He ends up making four on the par three. And Scheffler just hits this shot to the, like the meat of the green on the left side. Doesn't even really try to make a three, or excuse me, a two. Ends up making a two putt three. I think his par was from like a foot and a half. And it's like, yeah, that's probably what you should do. He's just very good at sort of knowing when to attack and when to lay back, picking his spots. And I think that's a more difficult thing to do than people would imagine. It's very difficult to stay disciplined when you're at the level that Scheffler's at, because he does in his mind think like, I have all the shots, I can do anything, right? And so the discipline to not do anything and just to kind of manage your way around, I think is really, really impressive. And I think he's going to end up winning this golf tournament.
Well, I agree with you, brother. Here is the stat line. 4.7 in the positive from tee to green, and he lost 0.2 with the putter. So game that out, and he's basically gaining 19 strokes from tee to green, losing one with the putter. Like, this is literally what he has done for 12 months straight.
I was going to say, like, you were big on this in Phoenix, and I thought it was a great point. Like, this is just kind of who he is, you know, it's or at least right now. And I put this out there. Like, I think he's kind of underrated still. We might've talked about this on Tuesday. He came into the week, two strokes better in ball striking than the second best ball strike per tournament, not per round. Two strokes better per tournament, which is a lot, than the second best ball striker in the world so far in 2023. I think it was Luke List was second. Mm. That's a lot of strokes. I mean, that's a lot of strokes to be better than like the 10th best, much less the second best. He hasn't played well at TPC Sawgrass. Yeah, I think he only has two starts there, maybe three. But he's just always in it. You know, it's not exciting necessarily. It's kind of boring at times. And you look up and he's 7 under, 9 under, 12 under, and in the mix on the back nine on Sunday.
The third man in that featured group this morning was John Rahm. They started on 10, so he gets birdies on 16 and 18, then nothing until number 8, where he makes a bogey. So that is 15 pars, 2 birdies, and 1 bogey for a 1-under round of 71. Fourth from tee to green for John Rahm, 110th with the flat stick. So that is the type of profile, KP, that's just like ready to erupt, ready to bounce back.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was interesting because I thought he didn't putt it very well, obviously, like you said. And he didn't have, what was the thing we were talking about coming into the week? The left miss. He didn't have that miss going, which I thought was encouraging. Now, I will say his short game at times, there were a couple of holes, I think 11, where he has to lay up. He hits a kind of a bad drive, a little bit to the left, not way left, but a little bit, lays up, and then just hit like a, I didn't see the shot. I just saw the shot link on it. It was a really bad approach shot. Did you see the shot on 11?
I did not see it.
It was early. It was like their second hole of the day. It was probably like 2:30 in the morning your time.
I don't think I saw it yet.
But then he gets up and down from like a tough bunker shot at 11 to make 5. And so I thought he was not really sharp from tee to green, but his short game, at least like around the greens and kind of in the bunkers, saved him a little bit at times on Thursday.
Before we go to the odds board, I'm sorry, Aaron Wise, we're going to have a little bit of fun at your expense here. It was an 80 for Aaron Wise, though he stepped on the 18th tee, his final hole of the day, Kyle, just two over par. And when the golf course is playing, you know, three quarters of a shot over in the afternoon wave, it's playing one and a quarter. Two over is not so bad. Aaron Wise hit what appeared to be, and you can kind of see it in the graphic here on the shot length, almost three identical shots directly into the water. I mean, they landed within a yard of one another.
Yeah, he's accurate for sure. So here's my take on this. Your fourth shot is not the one that you hit way out to the right. At that point, just keep pulling for the left side, right? Like, if you want to hit it way out to the right, do it on the second or third. After that, it's already over anyway, so you might as well just keep going for it.
I'll give him a pass on the second one, because you hit the first one and you're like, okay, well, you know what? I think I had the right call. I had the right club. Let me just try that again. When you hit an identical second shot, your third one can't be the same exact thing. Right. You got to just change a club. You got to spray it into the pine straw. You got to do something.
Do you think it's a worse feeling to be hitting seven off the tee or to miss a one-handed putt from 9 inches like Nick Watney did? What do you think? What would you rather happen in the Players' Championship to you?
I think honestly hitting seven off a tee.
I think that would be worse too, because I think the one-handed putt miss, you're kind of like, it's a little bit of it's a little masochistic at that point, to where you're like, right, I kind of want to miss this because I'm so mad. I think getting seven off the tee would be the worst feeling that you could have on a golf course.
I'll tell you what, he made a hell of a four. Unfortunately, it was with his fourth ball.
His second sleeve.
His fourth tee shot into the pine straw, hits it down the fairway, stuffs it to 3 feet, makes the putt. It ends up being a 10. He is now currently that 80 is eight over, a tied for – I mean, he beat Lucas Herbert. He didn't finish dead last through round one. Anything else on this side before we go talk about the betting favorites and the odds board?
I'm just rolling through the top of the board. Justin Suh, 5 under, still on the golf course. That's pretty interesting to me. Sam Burns has not been playing that great. He shot 68. Let's talk about Hovland and Spieth real quick at 3 under.
Okay, yeah, both these guys in the afternoon wave, so kind of on the wrong side of it. We'll start here with Jordan Spieth, Kyle. Birdie on two, that's the par five, gives it back at seven, so he makes the turn at even par, and then he rattles off birdies on 10, 11, and 12, an offsetting pair of one birdie, one bogey on 14 and 16. So that's a 3 under 69 for Spieth.
It was fun. It's always fun. I don't know if it's always fun. It's always entertaining. Yeah. I don't know how high my trust level is with him right now at Sawgrass. This is Augusta. I think it's a little different, but some of these tee shots, man, they're really difficult. And you can just, I love this golf course. I'm not a architecture nerd. I don't really know what I'm talking about. I just enjoy watching professionals play this golf course because it seems like you can make seven like pretty quickly. And a lot of the golf courses the PGA Tour goes to, it doesn't really seem like that. And I mean, make seven on like a bunch of different holes pretty quickly. That's I don't know if it's fun, but that's interesting. That makes the golf interesting. And I think with Spieth, I feel like there's maybe a couple sevens coming. Maybe not. He doesn't play well here, and I think there's a reason for that. But it was at least entertaining on day one. I would honestly be pretty surprised if he was like really in the mix late on Sunday.
Me too, but you know, crazier things have happened. Victor Hovland also goes out in even par 36, comes in. How about this, Kyle? Birdieing four of his last five holes, 14, 15, 16, 18, including a close call on 16, where he had to stand on his tippy toes on the railroad ties there, or whatever you call it, the bulkhead, and hit a great putt and tapped it in for birdie.
Yeah, he... he played really, he had a lot of really good kind of unique shots coming home. I mean, the shot he hit on 14 was a joke.
Yeah.
He was on the other side of a mound with, it looked like some trees kind of overhanging, at least to some extent. And he hits it to like 9 feet or 7 feet or something. Just something absurd. I mean, I thought Brad Faxon was going to come out of the broadcast booth. He was losing his mind. It was a really, really good shot. And he's another guy that I think he's very smart about course management at TPC Sawgrass. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, it's not as if like the I could be great at course management at TPC Sawgrass. That doesn't mean anything. I'm not going to win the golf tournament, right? So you still got to hit a bunch of really hard shots. But I don't know. It wasn't as encouraging maybe as Scheffler's, because I think boring is actually encouraging. Hovland's was a little bit too exciting. Almost hits in the water on 16, like you said. There was, you know, could have made a 5 on 14. There was a lot of different things going on, but I'm glad he's in the mix as my one and done.
He's working with Joe Mayo now, and this cat is something. He just talks the entire time, and he'll be like 2 clicks that way, blah blah blah, like just a million words a minute, and then just Victor just hits a seed. Like I've seen it in action. It's unbelievable. I don't understand anything this guy's saying, but they're speaking a completely different language out there, and they are like technically dialed into everything.
Yeah, which is it's a fascinating world, and one that I'm pretty unfamiliar with, but it seems like it's working. And I think that, man, it'd be fun if he got in the mix. You know, we talked about who needs like a signature win. This would be a big time, I think, leap for him, even though he's been in the top 15 in the world for, or top 10, top 15, top 20 for the last couple of years. I think winning the Players Championship at this sort of juncture of the PGA Tour's history and with how good the golf has been this year, I think this would be a, if he can stay in it, maybe get in the mix with Scheffler, Morikawa, that'd be a pretty big deal for Victor Hovland.
We're going to take a look at the odds board and see what Vegas thinks his chances are for winning the Players' Championship. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt. And I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
And we're back. Colin Morikawa is the favorite to win the 2023 Players Championship. No surprise. 7 under par, plus 330 over at Caesars Sportsbook. Scottie Scheffler lurking 4 shots off the pace and 3 shots behind Morikawa is plus 450. There's Victor Hovland. That afternoon round of 69 moves him to 7-1. Jordan Spieth, same thing, 11-1. John Rahm, one of your pre-tournament favorites, is 16-1. And then we rounded out with Jason Day at 22-1. And Justin Suh, who, as you mentioned, Kyle, 5 under par, still a couple of holes to play. This round has been suspended, so we'll have to finish that up on Friday morning. He's just 3 off the pace, and he's got he's got a 28 footer for eagle coming back on Friday morning on 16. So that's the odds board.
I don't really love these numbers. I don't like Hovland at 7. I would like Hovland at maybe 11. I don't like Spieth at 11 though. I would like everybody at the person below them, like their number.
Yeah. That would
like, I would like Rahm at 22, not at 16. Scheffler, would you rather have Scheffler or Morikawa here?
I'm pretty sure Scheffler's going to win.
I kind of am too.
we talked about this for a month. We've talked about it. We both picked him to win before the tournament. You talked about kind of the lack of stress, and that is so critical. And I'm watching it. Like, I'm watching how to win golf tournaments every single week with Scottie Scheffler, or at least give yourself a chance. And I'm pretty sure he's going to win.
Yeah, I think I agree. So I guess if that's true, we'd rather have Scheffler at 9-2.
Yeah, they're not super great.
Suh, 22 is kind of like,
but he's,
I don't
but he's
know.
Probably not going to win. Like, he might right. drain this eagle. He'll drain this eagle on Friday, and he'll move to 12-1. But like, I don't think he's actually. I mean, I guess Rahm now longer than he was before the tournament after having a -2 day with the putter is interesting. But I think it should be longer.
Yeah, no, I agree about Rahm because he seems pretty volatile, but going in the right direction for the rest of the event. So, yeah, I think Rahm at 16. Somebody in the comments said the real lead is 7 under, which is true. Our first what's the real lead of the year? Yeah, I mean, can I go beyond that? Like, who's
yeah, okay, so how about this? You want to take a stab at what do you think Chad Ramey's odds are? So he's actually leading the golf tournament. What has Caesars set his odds at?
I would be surprised if it was shorter than like 40.
Yeah, he's 35.
Okay,
so you're close. Okay, yeah, so a little bit further would be Sam Burns at 25-1, Max Homa's at 27, Siwoo is 28. Keegan, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, Patrick Cantlay, and Taylor Pendrith are all 40-1. Minwoo's 55. Did Cam Young make a big number coming in? Because he's 55-1.
Yeah, he must have.
He bogeyed 18. So he went birdie on 16, birdie on 17, bogey on 18. That would have been nice to get in.
Homa's even. Why is he 27-1? He should be longer than that, right? Why is Homa 27 and Cantlay is 40? They're both even.
Yeah, these are tough. These are tough. Yeah, Cantlay. I mean, Cantlay had that's actually first off quite perceptive because Patrick Cantlay had shorter odds to win this golf tournament before the tournament started than Max Homa. Yet now they are both at even par. Homa's 27-1. Cantlay's 40. I guess the argument is Homa played on the harder side of things, but boy, that doesn't really matter anymore moving forward, does it? Unless Caesars thinks there's another wave split coming.
Yeah, I think, you know, this JT shot one over. That's what Rory probably should have shot today. This tournament is so, I mean, remember when JT came from like 10 back after two rounds, 2 years ago in 2021, he shot like, I'll get the numbers wrong, like 67, 66 or something on Saturday, Sunday. So it can happen. I mean, somebody brought this up on the broadcast. Like, this is a very, it might've been, I think it might've been Brad Faxon. Him and McGinley were great together, by the way, but you can go, and maybe this is why I like Sawgrass so much, because you can go and shoot 65, but then you can also like pretty easily go shoot 75, and it doesn't feel like we get that variance in scoring that often on the PGA Tour. So I honestly, Rick, I might go deeper on this and go with like Cantlay at 40 or somebody like that.
Just, yeah, there's a really good chance this leaderboard looks completely different tomorrow.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it will. And I think that you could get some of those guys that even like a JT at one over is not, certainly not out of it. So I would look at the minus one with Rom, the even with like a Cantlay and a, I don't know, maybe Adam Scott, Xander's at even. And then the one overs with Finau, JT, and just see if you can, like, I don't know, pick off some of those guys.
2021 JT went 71, 71, 64, 68.
Yeah. I mean, that's not crazy. He just started making putts and it was super fun. So this tournament does seem to do that where you get that. Remember when Roberto Castro shot 63 in the first round that one year? Mm-hmm. That's a little bit what the Chad Ramey thing feels like, of like it identifies these kind of, you know, guys that had great days early, but then like the ball strikers seem to rise up by the end.
We're rooting for you, Chad. Prove everybody wrong. Go win the players.
That'd be great. It'd be a great story.
Go win the players championship. All right. We'll be back after rounds 2, 3, and 4 to break down everything you need to know for this week's players championship. Big thanks, producer Josh, doing all the hard work behind the scenes. Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS on Twitter. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.